interesting book so far. Not negative, but basically, as you recall, what we're seeing and what he's dealing with and what he's learning and how it's all happening in his life, he's telling us what it's like to be without God. What your life is like when you spend it without God, when you try to do the things that the world says are going to work or help, and he says it's useless, it's empty. Without God, it's just empty. He's going to continue that thought. In chapter 4, he even gets a little, not depressed, but he even gets a little further down before he does go back up. He says this in verse 1 of chapter 4. So I returned and considered all the oppressions that are done under the sun. And behold, the tears of such as were oppressed, and they had no comforter. And on the side of their oppressors there was power, but they had no comforter. Solomon continues his search, as you recall, that's what he's been up to, for meaning. He continues his search for satisfaction in this life. What's it all about, he asks. What are we doing? Why are we doing it? Where does it lead? Where does it go from here? Is this all there is? Remember, he's asked us basically those questions, and he's wondering, what do you do with it? And I've done this, and I've done that, and I've done this, and it's just nothing. And now he says, even worse than that, he says, I returned and considered all the oppressions. And he says this, the poor always get the worst deal. That's what he's saying right here. I considered all the oppressions that are done under the sun. Behold, the tears of such as were oppressed, they had no comforter. He says, and on the side of their oppressors there was power, but those that are oppressed had no comforter. If you take a look, it has not changed. And the world is kind of a bummer that way, because the oppressed still are. And the old saying, the rich get rich and the poor get poorer, it's still true to this day. Nothing has changed since Solomon was alive 3,000 years ago or so. The poor always get the worst deal. The oppressors do what they want to do. You just take a look around. You don't have to look very far to see that the oppressors, those that are in power, they basically do what they want to do. And he says, and the oppressed, they have no say in the matter, and there is no comforter. They have no one to help them. Jesus, when he was going to go back to heaven, back to the Father, he said, I will not leave you orphans. I will not leave you comfortless. The world is comfortless. You know that, don't you? I mean, for those of you who kind of live in it and kind of live like it, there's not much comfort in it. So they seek comfort in any way they can get it. Drugs, sex, whatever they think will work for them to work this all out. And they find out, like Solomon, it's all waste of time. It's all empty. It doesn't work. I know people that are married, who want to be single, and then they become single, and they are just miserable because they're single. People that are single want to get married, and then they become married, and now they're miserable because they're married. And without the Lord, none of this stuff works. And that's what Solomon is telling us. And he says, the poor always get the worst deal. Now, just take a look at our world today. Whether it's a democracy, or whether it's a republic, or whether it's communism or socialism, just look around the globe, and the poor still get the worst deals, don't they? They are comfortless. There is no comforter. You see, the world needs Jesus. That's what they need. I sometimes think that people who say they're called to the mission field don't really know what missions are anymore. Because what they're saying is, I want to go help these people eat. I want to go help them learn to read. I want to go help them. And you know, mission work is that comes as secondary. First, there's the preaching of Jesus Christ and Him crucified and risen from the dead. If we're not doing that, any organization, I know that the hospitals over here send groups, not Christian groups, to different countries, and they do dental work on people's teeth. That's a nice thing. Or they'll do little medical clinics, or they'll do chiropractic care, or whatever they do. And Jesus said this, what does a person get? What do they have if they gain the whole world and lose their own soul? Take a look at the Apostle Paul. He didn't go to the mission field to make sure that they understood personal hygiene. He went to tell the people about Jesus Christ, that Jesus loves them, gave himself for them, that he died on the cross and shed his blood, and he rose again. Now, when he was there among the people, he and his team, they would minister as they could, but do you understand what the goal was? Do you understand why he was there in the first place in Macedonia or in Greece or in Asia or wherever he ended up, even when he said, I got to get to Rome? Do you understand that? Solomon could see it. Those that are oppressed are comfortless. And many, many in this world today are oppressed. No matter what the government is like, they're still oppressed. They need Jesus. Verse 2 says, wherefore, after looking at this, wherefore, I praised the dead, which are already dead, more than the living, which are yet alive. Yea, better is he that both, than both they, which have not yet been, who had not seen the evil work that is done under the sun. Now, see, this is kind of a real downer here. Solomon says, I've been around. I see that the poor are really oppressed. Those of you that have been, and you don't have to go to South America, and you don't have to go very far to see poor people that are oppressed, poor people that are being taken advantage of, and even literally being held down. You don't have to go very far to see that. And Solomon said, it makes me sick. And Solomon came to the conclusion that a person is better off dead. Now, that's pretty negative, wouldn't you say? Let me read it to you again. I praised the dead which are dead already, more than the living which are still alive. Yea, better is he than both they, which has not been, who have not seen evil work that is done under the sun. Pretty negative here, Solomon. He comes to the conclusion that a person is better off dead than alive. He says the only thing that would be better to be dead right now than to be alive. He said there's one that's better off than both of those. What could be better off than being dead or being alive? He says the person that's never been born. It's no such thing. It's not a person. But that's his thinking. The one that's really got it made is the one that has never, ever been born. Why? Because they would, if you've never been born to this world, you would never see the suffering and the ugliness and the oppression and the way that people are treated. You and I have seen the videos from Iraq. I'm sure you've probably seen them or heard about them. How the Iraqi people were treated. They have videos of the torture chambers. They have videos of the when the weapons of mass destruction were used up there in northern Iraq. And you see what happened to the people. We've seen videos, or maybe you've seen firsthand some of the things that are going on in Africa, or some of the things that are going on in the Far East, over in China, over in Thailand, over in Vietnam. And we can list it, South America. We can just list these things, the oppression, the ugliness. He says it's better to have never been born than to have to see this ugliness that's in the world. No food. Some people live with no food, no shelter, no clothing. And the government forces attack them, rape them, murder them, maim them at will. And it's like no one cares. There are nations, there were nations then, there are nations today that are at war within themselves, at civil war. And these wars have been going years and years. And none of the very big nations step in and help. They let it continue on. They secretly ship them
weapons and supplies to keep the war going.
That's going on right now. And so Solomon says, it's so depressing that it's better to have never been born at all. And that continues around this planet today. Now remember, Solomon is saying, this is all without God. This is what it's like without God. Can you imagine what it must be like to be so oppressed there in Iraq or wherever you choose and have no hope, with no comforter, no hope at all? And the Iraqi people now are depending upon the United States or whoever else they're hoping will come in and stay and keep it under control. And over there, the government of Sudan, they're trying to sign this ceasefire agreement. It hasn't worked in the last few months, but they're settling down. So the people of southern Sudan that are not Christians have no hope. They're just thinking, this life is worth nothing. Maybe someone will come in and help. Maybe the UN will bring in more food. You see, there's no comforter. The world needs Jesus. Someone needs to tell them. Our problem is we get so busy fighting over what color the hymnals ought to be, what day we ought to be doing certain things. And we've got this pride issue going, I should be doing this. You shouldn't be doing that. We should all have some of the. And so we're so tangled up in our own little worlds that we're forgetting to take the word of God to the rest of the world. And Solomon says, it's a pity, it's a shame. Again, verse 4. I considered all the travail, and every right work that for this a man is envied of his neighbor. This is also vanity and vexation of spirit. The fool folds his hands together and eats his own flesh. Better is a handful with quietness than both the hands full with travail and vexation of spirit. Solomon points out something to us that he's learned. And I think, basically, even though a lot of this book is negative, and you see that he's not equating God in the picture, he will later on. But there's something. He has hit the nail right on the head here. He said, again, I considered all travail and every right work that for this a man is envied of his neighbor. This is also vanity and vexation of spirit. Solomon points out that it is envy or jealousy of others that's the real problem. That's where oppression comes from. That's where strife. That's where the arguments. And, of course, James will say that. Don't these things come from your own flesh, from your own lusts, your desire? This is what I want. This is what I think should be. And Solomon says it's all envy. It's all greed. It's all jealousy. See, when someone works hard and that hard work pays off and that person tries to do what is right and tries to do what is best, what do people think? They're jealous. How come that's happening for him? He's this, he's that. How come she? Wait a minute. They're louses. They're weasels. How's that happening? Solomon says, I considered all the travail and every right work that for this a man is envied of his neighbor. When you work hard and you really begin to grow your own crops and you begin to do the things that are right, people get jealous. People want to knock you down. People want to shut it down. They're jealous of the life you've got. There are many, many times that you will see it is common that people who don't have much think that the rich ought to provide for them. And I don't see that in Scripture anywhere, do you? That just because you are really well-to-do, you ought to provide for me? I see that the Lord says that I ought to, you ought to, we ought to work hard and do what's right with our own hands and not expect that someone's going to give us handouts and these kinds of things. You know, we saw this played out really clearly, this envy and this jealousy. We saw it played out clearly between Cain and his brother. Remember that? Why did Cain murder his brother? Because Abel had a right heart
and was doing right and wanted to bless the Lord, and Cain didn't. So there was the jealousy over what? The fact that Abel was doing it right. So the jealousy caused the sin, the oppression, the murder. He says the fool, this is verse 5, folds his hands together and eats his own flesh. Well, that sounds gross, but let's say that in American. The fool is lazy and actually destroys his own self or her own self. The fool doesn't want to do hard work. They really want something else. They're lazy. There's that old saying, and it is true. Missionaries quote it quite a bit. If you give a man a fish, you've taken care of him for one day. If you teach a man to fish, you've taken care of him for a lifetime. Now, that's a true statement, but you might as well know that a fool is lazy. A lot of fools go into ministry because they think you don't have to work in ministry. But if you've been on the mission field for any time at all, doesn't take more than 25 minutes in some cases, you learn quickly. You can give a person a fish or you can teach them to fish, but you learn quickly that people here, as well as all around the world, some of them are lazy. They don't want to work. They want you to bring it to them and provide it for them. And I hear it. We hear it here quite often, because when you work in a ministry, a lot of people think that's what ministry's for. I've told you this. The electric company, the gas company, they give out the numbers of churches to the community. If you say, I can't pay my electric bill or my gas, whatever the bill is, or my phone, then they say, here are a list of churches. Call them. Just start calling. They go from the largest to the small, whatever. They've got a system. And so we get calls. Got a call, some calls say, Here's what I need. I need help. Well, you know, where do you go to church? Nowhere. Oh, but you want, you don't want to serve the Lord. You don't want to fellowship with God's people, but you want God to help you. Well, I want God to help me. They gave me this list and I'm calling churches. You know, I'm just looking for an easy hit. Many, many homeless people. Some are willing to work. And some are not. And I think you do a big, as Solomon's pointing out, he says the fool folds his hands. I think you do a big disservice to the ones who don't want to work by just opening up everything and feeding the world. You know, Israel has an outstanding system for taking care of the poor. They have a gleaning sort of system, and you can see how the law treats it, and you can see how Jesus will talk about it, and you can see how it works as the disciples even walk through a field and we're eating. And the way it works is when you work your field, and maybe you're growing, I don't know, grapes. Maybe you've got a vineyard, and you go through, and you go through, and everything that gets left, because lots gets left, you leave that for the poor. But you don't collect it and go, all right, poor, everybody come over here and we'll hand it out. You say to them, you're welcome to go through the field. You go earn what we've left you. And the good thing about it is the people that want to work, take a look at Ruth, worked hard and gleaned and was able, God provided for them that way. So number one, they're not feeling like they're on welfare. Number two, they're being helped, but they're at least putting some effort into it themselves. But the fool is lazy, folds his hands, and eats his own flesh. All that means literally is destroys himself. We were watching, Gene and I were watching some news, I guess it was about a week or so ago, some homeless people. Many of them need help, and they literally need some help to get on their feet. But they interviewed some, and I specifically remember some guy who, you know how some people, I think, go out of their way to just look bad? You know, he and his not his wife. They live together. It's his girlfriend. And they were asked, well, would you be willing to do some work? Or would you be willing to go through this program? If you, we'll let you stay here at this place to be out of the snow and out of the cold. And all you have to do is agree to certain rules. They wouldn't do it. No, we don't want that. We just want to get something to eat. We don't want to, you know, why put any effort? Well, that's exactly what Solomon saw. They refuse to work. They want to be taken care of. They're not willing to work. And what happens? Solomon says that eventually destroys that individual. It destroys that person. He says in verse 6, better is a hand full with quietness than both hands full with travail and vexation of spirit. And that means it's best or it's better to simply just be content with having our needs met. Just to be content with having our needs met. To be at rest or to be at peace or literally tranquil. There's a calmness in that. He says it's better to just have your needs met than to have an overabundance and to be uneasy or unsettled or striving after the wind, literally chasing the wind. I think that people get themselves in trouble when they seek to get rich. When they seek to get and to get and to get. Certainly nothing wrong with earning a living, and obviously he's making a point that we should. But people get themselves in trouble. I know for a fact men who are in ministry, and they think that that ministry should take care of them and should do everything for them, and they become lazy. They don't spend much time in their office. They don't do a lot in their office. They don't study much. They just, you know, kind of use notes that they've done back in the years past. And their attitude is, I'm a pastor. People should take care of me. But you don't see that in Scripture. So there's a danger there. So watch out for that. And it's best to be content. I think it's 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 5 through 8. Now this is those of us who have the Lord. This is what Paul writes to Timothy, and this is the word of God. 1 Timothy 6, 5 through 8. Perverse disputings of men of corrupt minds and destitute of the truth, supposing that gain is godliness. From such, withdraw yourself. But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. Having food and clothing, let us be content with that. So you see, Solomon recognizes that many without the Lord are in this position. Paul, later on, after Jesus Christ has risen from the dead, shed his blood on the cross, and now sitting at the right hand of the Father, Paul tells Timothy, you know, we need to teach people to just be content with such things as they have. Look at Hebrews 13:5. Let your lifestyle be without covetousness, and be content with such things as you have. For he hath said, Jesus said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. So we are to live a lifestyle of contentment. We should be content. But he's saying, I see that that's not the case. So, I returned, verse 7 says. Then I returned, and I saw vanity under the sun, here on the earth. Emptiness, he said. There is one alone, and there is not a second. Yea, he hath neither child nor brother, yet is there no end of all his labor. Neither is his eye satisfied with riches, neither saith he, for whom do I labor and bereave my soul of good? This is also vanity. Yea, it is sore travail. He says, selfish greed is meaningless. Being alone and trying to get everything for yourself, he says, is empty. Now, all of us have throughout our lives seen the fairy tales. seen the movies, read the books about the misers, either girls or guys, who live all alone. They collect it all for themselves. They do it all for themselves. They're miserable. They're unhappy. I mean, the one that comes to my mind immediately, because it's near celebration of the Lord's birth, would be Scrooge, who was just a miserable person. He had a lot, but it was all, he was lonely. It was all for himself. You know, the guy's miserable. Solomon points out that's in the world. That's the way it works. They're greedy. They want things for themselves. He says it this way. They don't even think about who can I labor? Who and bereave my soul? He says, there's not a child. There's not a brother. These people are all alone. Maybe you've met people like that. They don't want anybody around. They just do it all for themselves. Solomon says, that is, let me use his language. That was emptiness also, vanity under the sun, verse 7 says. Now he goes on to say what he sees works well. Being all alone, working all alone, doing these things all alone, he says, no good. So he says, look at verse 9, he says, two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow, but woe to him that is alone when he falls, for he has not another to help him up. Again, if two lie together, then they have heat, but how can one be warm alone? And if one prevail against him, two shall withstand him, and a threefold cord is not quickly broken. So now he says, being all alone and doing this for yourself and for no one else, he says, no good. And he says, but two are better than one. Because, see, you can work together as a team. He's not just talking about marriage. Some people assume that this is only marriage here. No, marriage is included, but he's talking about, notice, working together. So it's not just in marriage, but it's in all of life. You can work together as a team. You can labor together and get more accomplished. Two can get more accomplished than one does. Unless, of course, they butt heads the whole way. And you try to do it all by yourself, it becomes a tedious and ugly mess, he says. You become bitter, hateful, and distrusting of others, and then they start calling you Ebenezer, right? Don't try to go it alone. Two are better than one. Three, he says, are even better than two. No, he is not referring to marriage. Though some people say, yes, he is. No, three are even better than two. And many take that to refer to marriage, but no. It refers to life in general as you're working. So, in the New Testament, because even though, now remember, we're talking about this life without the Lord. Now, even though he's talking about life without the Lord, there are some good points there. There are some excellent points made, things that you and I can learn from. So many people take this book and just disregard it. Remember, I've told you before, many people will tell you as a Christian, don't study Ecclesiastes, it's too negative. But I don't see it that way. You learn a lot here. Now, we come to the New Testament, and we're commanded to not be unequally yoked. He knows that we're going to be together in business or in marriage or whatever is going to happen. So he says, don't be unequally yoked. It's 2 Corinthians 6:14. I know that you know that, but we'll get the reference on tape. He says, be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship has righteousness with unrighteousness? And what communion hath light with dark? Don't be unequally yoked, he says. So I know. Now, first, we automatically think of marriage, and that's what most people think of. Okay, don't be unequally yoked. Well, yes, that's true. In marriage, don't be unequally yoked. Now, here's the danger. You're taking a chance someone could be lying to you because you don't know the heart. True? A friend of mine, a very good friend of mine, married a young man. And they went off as missionaries to Amsterdam. They were there for almost 2 years. had some trouble there. He got kind of a lousy attitude, came back. He left her because he said, I have never been a Christian. I don't believe in this at all. I've never been. And he walked away. Now, this person was a missionary for 2 years over in Amsterdam. How could you have known? You sure want to be in prayer, don't you? Because when you become unequally yoked, if you'll read the rest of that section, you can't hook death up with life. Now, I know some of you are into missionary dating. I'll just date this guy, and he'll think I'm a cutie, and therefore he'll come to the Lord. Don't count on it. Same with you guys. You get this girl, she's a little, I know that she really doesn't love the Lord. I know that she's really into this Far Eastern stuff. She says she's a Christian, though, so it's okay. Don't count on it. Drop this, leave it alone, get away. Can a man take fire into his bosom and not be burned? The answer is no, you will be burned when you play with fire. So don't be, it's a command, it's not a suggestion, it's a command. Don't be unequally yoked. You better be in prayer. You better know what you're doing. And of course, the way it works, if you're not married, if you are married, well, you need to, it's a whole different prayer request for you. If you have someone, if you're born again and your partner is not. But if you are single and you are thinking about getting married, then don't date a non-Christian for any reason at all, ever. For no reason ever should you date a non-Christian. Well, I just kind of want to hang out with him. Don't do it, because you will never marry anybody that you don't love, and you will never love anybody that you don't hang out with. Don't hang out with them. Don't call us and say, he's not saved, but I'm so in love. I don't even want to hear it. Don't do that. Don't go there, and you won't have to try to figure out how to get out. Don't start smoking, and you won't have to try to quit. You see how God works all that? So don't be unequally yoked. Now, it doesn't only mean marriage. How many of you have been really burned by a business partner who turned out to be, you thought was a Christian, and was not? And God says, don't be unequally yoked. You're going to get yourself into something that you're not going to be able to get out of. And I know many Christians today, at this moment, who are now being sued by their partners and being ripped off. And they're saying, how do I handle this? What do I do? I knew that this guy really wasn't into the Lord. He said he was a Christian. He seemed to be a nice guy. You know, you want to pray. Doesn't mean you won't make mistakes, but you want to pray. You want to be very careful, because two are better than one. You'll get a lot more business done if there's two of you doing it. One of you working the computer, one of you working the phones, or whatever your business might be. One of you setting the forms, and one of you pouring the cement. I don't know, whatever you do for a living. One of you dodging and one of you shooting. I don't know, whatever it is. So two are better than one, but you want to really be careful. Christian, he says, don't be unequally yoked. For what fellowship has righteousness with unrighteousness? What communion has light with dark? And the answer to those questions, the answer is none. Well, verse 13, we're almost done. Better is a poor and a wise child than an old and foolish king. Who do you think he might be talking about here? Who will no more be admonished. I'll read it together. Better is a poor and a wise child than an old and a foolish king who will no more be admonished, who will no more listen to direction or listen to instruction. I think Solomon right here is speaking from experience. Watch the next verses. For out of prison he cometh to reign, whereas also he that is born in his kingdom becometh poor. I considered all the living which walk under the sun with the second child that shall stand up in his stead. There is no end of all the people, even of all that have been before them. They also that come after shall not rejoice in him. Surely this is also emptiness, vanity, and vexation of spirit. what on the earth is going on here? Solomon, I believe, although this is kind of a difficult little piece here, I believe he's speaking from experience. He was a pretty smart kid, and now he's an old and foolish king. He's not been walking with the Lord. Remember, he said, I tried all this stuff. This was without God. I thought, I'll do this, right? Hey, and speaking of coming out of prison, or from out of prison he cometh to reign. Do you remember Joseph? Joseph was in prison for almost 13 years for a crime he didn't commit. He came out of prison to oversee the nation of Egypt. No, he wasn't the Pharaoh. But he was second in command. In other words, he was in charge. Whatever he said went. Some that are, and Solomon points out, you know, some are born to reign and never do. They are born that they should reign and they never do. They're never given the chance because of one situation or another. And Solomon, I think, may be referring to himself here. When he says this, out of prison he cometh to reign, whereas also he that is born in his kingdom becometh poor. Watch this. I considered all the living which walk under the sun with the second child that shall stand up in his place. I think Solomon's maybe referring to himself here when he says, I considered it. Because the truth is, he was the second child of King David and Bathsheba. Remember, the little baby died. Solomon was second child. Solomon, by the way, even though he did reign, the second child shall stand up in his stead. Even though he did reign, Solomon was not David's choice. He was not David's first choice. He for a long time was not David's choice. The baby died. Then there was Absalom. And Absalom would have been David's choice. But Absalom grew power hungry. And remember, he destroyed himself. He tried to take the throne by force. I like that story. Go back and read that when you get some time. 2 Kings there. He tried to take the throne by force, and his dad, David, wouldn't fight with him. His dad just packed some things, hopped on the donkey, rode away. Wise king. He said, the throne belongs to God. God will put on it who he wants on it. I'm not going to kill my own son or fight my own son for this. It's not worth it to me. So he says, I considered all the living which walk under the sun with the second child that shall stand up in his stead. Now watch this, verse 16. There is no end of all the people, even of all that have been before them. They also that come after shall not rejoice in him. Surely this is also vanity and vexation. He says, you know, I've been king, and remember, he talks about he's going to be leaving. He'll die. Remember in the last chapter, he said, we die like animals. Those that come after him will not rejoice in him, he says. I think that that's so well demonstrated in America that you don't have to look very far to understand what he means. When a president is elected, the people have high hopes. You've seen that over and over and over again. At first, they've got high hopes. And, you know, the president's ratings are high. Whatever that means. You know, they'll take a poll of people and the president ratings are high. But as time goes on, what happens? Well, you see, things don't go the way the people plan to. Some law came through, it's going to raise their taxes or lower their prescription prices or whatever it's going to do. Something changes. And notice the president ratings begin to slide. Just a bit, they're down from where they were before. And then the economy gets a little better and up go the ratings for the president. Then something goes wrong. And within days, the president's ratings in the trash again. It's a never-ending story. The king says, this too is a waste of time. You could really become depressed if you just think about his logic and see how well he's thought it out and recognize that that's what it is for all the people right now who don't have the Lord. That's just the way many of them see it. it's better to have never been born. You've heard people say that. Man, I wish I had never been born. And you know, every one of us that belongs to the Lord, we wouldn't think of saying that, would we? I'm glad he saved my life and I'm headed for heaven by his grace. And boy, every day will be Sunday on the other side. It's going to be great. You don't catch us going, I wish I'd never been born. You know, it's, you know, he says those that come after him were not pleased with their successor. And I see the campaign already heating up. Maybe it's time. Maybe that's how it always goes. But we're in a year where a campaign, you know, everybody's looking to jockey for position. And the campaign's heating up. And we see many of the candidates, they're not happy with the current president. They see everything in the world wrong. And you listen to them, they are not happy with anything that he's accomplished. Why? Because already they want to be a successor. Once the successor's there, they have no respect. They don't care for the one that's passed, is what he says. They're all saying the very same thing, too. I'll take charge. I'll take control. I'll correct things that are wrong. Now, people, do you really believe that's going to happen? I mean, do you really believe that one of them is going to come through, walk in, and things will be right? Of course we don't believe that. No, of course we don't. Solomon says it's a waste of time, it's emptiness, it's vain. They also that come after shall not rejoice in him. Their successors, they're going to say that he was a lousy king. I'll do it better. Then when that king's gone, that guy was really rotten. We'll take care of it. Then Hillary Clinton comes along soon and says, don't worry, I'll do it, you know. And the curse that God says in the book of Isaiah, read Isaiah chapters 1, 2, and 3. The curse is when your leaders become women. That is a curse from the Lord. If you don't believe me, you can go back and read that. So as soon as that begins to happen, pack up. Without God, Solomon's saying it's never going to be right. It's a waste of time. It's emptiness. It's never going to be right without God. Without God, it's vanity. Without God, this country will never be right. Without God, Canada will never be right. Mexico, you pick the country. Without God, the whole world will never be right. Psychology will give it a name. They'll come up with drugs to control it. Or they'll come up with ways to oppress more to keep it under control. But without the Lord, it will never be right. And that's what Solomon's pointing out to us here so clearly. You know, without the Lord, the world is never going to get what it really needs. And listen closely. I know that you may disagree, but that's okay. You can. No Republican, no Democrat, no politician of any kind is going to fix what's wrong with this country. No politician, no leader, no power on this earth or under the earth is going to come along and fix what's wrong with this world. There's going to be a guy who comes along who's going to cover it over with a Band-Aid and it's going to look right. And everybody's going to think we've finally done it. It's not going to happen. And then the wrath of God will be turned loose. Solomon is seeing the world through the eyes of a non-believer. But the lessons are for you and for me. We can keep these lessons in mind and we can learn and we can grow. So read through it. It's a short chapter, 16 verses. And pray about these things. Let's bow our heads together.